So it's time to move on. Our only man this afternoon. So here comes Huat San Chan from University of the Medical School of the University of Toronto. It's a long title. And the title is The Statistical Mechanics of How Recognition of Local DNA Juxtaposition Geometry May Underlie the Disentangling Actions of the Type II Topoisomerases.
The work I'm going to present to you was done in collaboration with Dr. Sim Rong Neil. He's going to give a talk tomorrow morning, and Lynn Cedric and Jennifer Mann is also involved in part of the work. So we've heard a lot about topoisomerases today, so that's great. So I don't have to give a lot of introduction. So the main question that we are trying to address is that we all know that this type 2 topoisomerase, this in a cartoon here, which is passed through a DNA double helix, passed through the segment, and then it would seal it again. So the question is, if we're just doing this randomly, if the topoisomerase is just doing this randomly, so it can unlock, but also it cannot. And also it can concatenate, and also it can concatenate. So why does it have a preference? But experimentally, in 1997, in this famous paper by the Cossarelli group in Science, we learned that for this 7 kb DNA, for example, the knots are 90 times lower than when it's in a topological equilibrium, and the catenates are 60 times lower. For a long, larger DNA circle, the knots are 50 times lower. So right here, you can see that there's some sort of a loop size dependence on these, but this is huge numbers that we want to account for. Well, this is some old picture taken by Lin. And so this is the DNA circle. This is topoisomerase. This is much smaller than the DNA that it's acting on. So inevitably, we have to ask this question, how does it figure out, how does the enzyme figure out the topological stage of the DNA so that it can do the proper thing, when to do the passage, when not to do the passage, in order to disentangle the DNA, making it have fewer knots and decatenate was and doing the reverse thing. So there have been a number of proposals in the literature. This is called a kinetic proof reading model by the Marco group. Basically, it's assumed that you need two kind of activation events in order to pass a DNA, and this way you can make some sort of a topological distinction. So this is an active banding model by Volokoski et al., assuming that the enzyme actually actively bend one strand of the DNA, and only when it forms a loop like that, then the other strand will just pass through, and there's also a three-segment interaction. So we're not going to go into detail of evaluating these kind of models, although we can do that in the future. What we are focusing more is this simpler perspective over by Gregory Buck and Lynn Cedric in a paper in 2004. So the idea was, okay, so if you, well, they just argue from this, that actually that's what attracted me to this idea. Say, it, lots may be harder to think for physicists like me, I'm not a mathematician, but for rings it's easier to understand, right? So if you have rings, if you want to decatenate it, maybe a simple rule is if it's a hook, like so, then you always pass it through, and if it's a free juxtaposition, defined like so, then you don't do it. So if you have a rigid, you only have rigid circle forming catenates, this would be successful 100% of the time. So what they suggest is that actually this would work in general for unknotting and also for concatenating. So we set out to test that out. And so the idea is how does a local conformational or local geometrical feature of the DNA can provide global information. So there are some precedents of this in studies of protein. This is a very old work that I've done when I was in the Candu's group. So this is a distribution of contacts when you have no constraint, but you have already assumed a preformed contact, then the whole distribution will be very different. So even with a local cover constraint, you can affect the global distribution of topological or geometrical properties. So again, as I said, so how much can we infer about the global topology from local juxtaposition geometry? So the questions we first attempted to answer, because I understood that better in terms of decatenating, is can this information be used to decatenate to interlinking polymer rings? Okay, so we're going to take a lattice approach because it's easy to conceptualize, at least for me. Siwong is going to talk about off-lattice continuum Wernicke chain model tomorrow. That is sort of an extension of this work. So we take this approach, which we call a juxtaposition-centric approach. That means we start our conformational enumeration or conformation sampling by first preforming a juxtaposition. Although this is just a computational trick, but actually has a lot of advantages, because if you try to do all the sampling and try to look for this juxtaposition, it's not a very efficient way of doing so. But if we just put this in as a starting point, then we will always have the juxtaposition that we are interested in. And if we want to do a segment passage, we can just do it virtually by just putting this through this in a virtual way. And then we compute the polynomial or the linking number, then we could get the result of the segment passage. Okay, so when we start, we look at just this free juxtaposition, which we call hook. This is free. This is a planar free. This is not that useful later on, so we could just sort of focus on these two. So you can see that we can build this. So this LK is not the LK that of the winding of the double strand, but this is actually the LK of linking of the two loops. So we can form this catenase on the lattice in this way. Okay, so we started with some very small lattice circles. So we can have loop equal size is n is 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, and we can start with a hook juxtaposition here, and we start with a free juxtaposition here, then we can count all the possible conformation, all possible configurations. And we can see that for the hook juxtaposition, there are more conformations that are length. Here is very few conformations that are length, this LK equals to 1 here. And we can also look at loops of different sizes, the same thing, which is easy to understand in a way in hindsight, because if you have a hook, if it's very small, actually, there's no way that it's not length. And when it's bigger, it has some chance of not being length, but still there's a big difference between if you start with a hook juxtaposition versus you start with a free juxtaposition. So we can define a parameter called discrimination parameter. This is just a number of length configuration of a number of unlinked configuration, starting with a preformed juxtaposition. So you can see that for the hook juxtaposition, these factors is always greater than 1. And as I said, intuitively, when the loop size is small, the discrimination is even bigger. On the other hand, if you have the free juxtaposition, this is always smaller than 1. So the biases are stronger for small loops, but it's important to note that even up to circles of 200 units on the lattice, it doesn't fall down to zero. It sort of goes, it looks like going to an asymptote. So now we can do some what we call a virtual segment passage to see what would happen if we pass the segment through at a hop juxtaposition versus at a free juxtaposition. So we can just do it this way. So this is not a real conformation in the lattice, so this would lead to some biases that we are going to fix later on, but for the time being, this is good enough. We can just recalculate the linking number by just imagining that we have this virtual passage at the hop juxtaposition and for this one at the free juxtaposition, and these are event probabilities. So starting with a hop juxtaposition, most of the transformation are from a linked configuration to an unlinked configuration. But on the other hand, if you have a free juxtaposition, most of the transformation are from an unlinked conformation to a linked conformation. So even from this, we can see that for the hop juxtaposition, if we do a segment passage, it's mostly concatenating, and for the free juxtaposition, it's mostly concatenating. Okay, so we can also generalize this approach because we have just looked at three juxtaposition, but we can actually look at all juxtaposition on the lattice at least. And if we have 5 units on one side, 5 units on the other side, just like in the free and the hop juxtaposition I just defined, we have around 3,000 juxtapositions. And we can characterize them using some kind of geometric parameter. It's a little bit busy here, but let's just focus on this parameter that this N1 and N2 is a little sort of approximate normal vector, and then we can look at the curvature, and this is sort of a parameter that is quite good in defining how Hockett is the juxtaposition. And then we can correlate the ability to decatenate or not with this Hockett parameter. Okay, so here is the discrimination factor, and we can see that this Hop juxtaposition is mostly Hop is at a parameter with this H parameter equals to 2, and here is the free juxtaposition. And you can see that the discrimination, whether it's mostly length or mostly unlength, correlate quite well, at least the maximum is correlate quite well with this Hopness parameter. Okay, so now we can move on to look at unknotting. So how does the local geometry of juxtaposition affect knotting and knotting by segment passage at a juxtaposition? So here's some lattice. This is a knot. This is a 3-1 star knot. This is a 6-1. You can expand it to see that it actually is a knot. So we can do the same thing. We start with the same thing as a sort of exploration of the general principle. We do exact enumeration for smaller size. This is now no longer a two-loop simulation. It's just a one-loop simulation because we are looking at knots. So here, n is the size of the loop from 14 to 30. We could enumerate this exactly. N1, N2 are these two, the length of these two sub-loops. So we start with a Hopf juxtaposition. Well, most, because these are short, so most of these circles, they don't have many knots, but still you have a knot one knot for if you start with a Hopf juxtaposition versus if you start with a free juxtaposition. We also look at this, what we call a half Hopf juxtaposition, because Bologarski proposed something like this that would be, he proposed that it could be useful for unknotting and for decatenating, so we would like to compare the effect of these, say, with the Hopf juxtaposition. So this one, it doesn't have a knot of knots, but it still have more than a three. Okay, so now we look at the topological discrimination by a preformed juxtaposition. So we have a Hopf juxtaposition like this. Then as a function of the loop size, this is the variation of the knot probability. So it's quite low because it's still a small loop, but it's much higher than if you start with a free juxtaposition, or if the loop is unconstrained, that means we don't have a preformed juxtaposition. So that means even at this level, we know that if we do some sort of passage at the Hopf juxtaposition, it's going to unknot, more likely to unknot than to knot. So to do that, we again use what we call this virtual segment passage operation, and so like this hop juxtaposition, we just change it into something like that. But now we have to go into this a little bit more detail because we look at all these around 3,000 juxtaposition, but now with the one loop with the knot, actually there's also a sign that we worry about, so actually it's about double that, around 6,000 juxtaposition. But a lot of them actually you cannot really do this segment passage because they would be something like this, that you have something parallel that you cannot really do a segment passage. So we just narrow this down to around 700 juxtaposition that can do this kind of segment passage, and if we are more picky, then we only allow this kind of segment passage, and we only swap the central feet of these two sides of the juxtaposition. We are only around 175 juxtaposition. So we can look at this juxtaposition, look at the geometrical properties, and then try to correlate that with the unknotted potential. Okay, so we can use a simple mass equation to calculate the steady state knot probability versus the knot probability at topological equilibrium. This is really quite simple. So the mass equation is this is the rate of change of the knot population is equal to some constant. This is the rate of change from a knot to a knot. Because the changes can only happen at a juxtaposition J, so it's labeled by J, and this is from a knot to knot. This is from so it's minus the flux out from the knot to a knot. And then we assume that this fast equilibration between all the population that are not with the population that are not but with the juxtaposition J. So this PUJ can be written as some constant CUJ times PU and likewise for the not population. So you put this all in and then the steady state is defined by dpk dt equal to zero is equal to this. And just work this through, and then we can define the knot reduction parameter Rk. And Rk, in our definition, is the ratio, is defined here, this is the ratio of the knot probability at steady state over the knot probability at steady state over the corresponding ratio at topological equilibrium. And this is really quite easy to work through. Actually, a similar formulation was also put forward by Wolodarski et al. In 2001. So we can, by working this through and defining this RK this way, actually we can just use this event probability that I showed you before for the linking and unlinking case and just plug that in and then we can get this knot reduction factor. Okay, so here are the chain length dependence of the knot reduction factor for these three sort of special juxtaposition that we chose to look at. So this is hope, this is free, this is the half hope that I told you about, and this is the log scale. So anything above the 0.9 meaning that the juxtaposition can unknot. That means here, for example, is reducing the knot population by 100 times. And just as consistent with experiment, this reduction in knot is more prominent when the chain length is shorter. And when chain length is longer, it's going to be less, but still it's pretty high, is more than 10 times, even up to a loop size of 500. And if you do a passage at the free juxtaposition, actually you would tend to knot himself a knot. So definitely, if the topoisomerase can recognize a hook juxtaposition and only do a segment passage at a hook juxtaposition, you can reduce knot probability by a lot. And I should add that this half hook can do that too, but not as well as the fully hook juxtaposition. Okay, so we can also take a water wheel and try to correlate the unknotting potential of various juxtaposition with the geometrical properties of the juxtaposition. And let's forget about this. Let's just look at this Hopf juxtaposition. It's the main point is made here. So this is the Hopf juxtaposition. This is the Hopkins parameter. This is the most Hopf according to this parameter. This is the free juxtaposition, the least Hopf minus 2. And you can see that is quite well correlated. This is the logarithm of the large reduction factor is quite well correlated with this Hopkins parameter. Okay, so this is something that I can say I'm pretty proud of, because I saw this data from the Cossarelli paper in 1997 showed this scaling between the large reduction factor and the length reduction factor. So these are topo isomers from different organisms. You look at this log, it's around 1.6. It seems that our model can offer a rationalization for this scaling. Okay, so first, if we just look at this is Hopf juxtaposition, free juxtaposition, half Hopf, looking at chain length from 26 to 500, you can see that log of RL and log of RK actually scale quite nicely for this free juxtaposition. Oh, by the way, our definition is slightly different from theirs, but it's basically identical. And now if we take a more broadened view, not just these three juxtapositions, look at all the juxtapositions, but now restrict ourselves to n equals to 100, we also get more or less the same thing. These are each of these points correspond to the knot reduction factor and the length reduction factor for a particular juxtaposition. They almost all of them lie on this line, and this RK scale more or less with exponents of 2. So, I mean, it's not 2 is not exactly 1.6, but I think it's over some sort of a strong evidence that something like this is going on in the real top isomers. Okay, so these are all published, and now I'm move on. So let us summarize this first. And I said this more or less already, discriminatory topological information is embodied in local juxtaposition geometry. This information is significant. Selective segment passage and Hopf juxtaposition can be a highly successful strategy for disentangling both catenins and knots. Of course, whether this works this way has to be verified by experiment, but this seems to be even on a pure theoretical ground, there's strong evidence that something like this is going on. And this framework of thinking about the problem, doing the simulation, is useful for generating hypotheses and guiding future experiments. So let's move on some work that we are in the process of writing up. So this is about supercoiling. So the upshot of this is we found that this the same selective segment passage at Hopf, and also the twisted juxtaposition, I'll tell you what it is in a few slides, also provides the statistical mechanical basis for the supercoil suppression action of type 2 topo. So from the same paper, same Cossarelli paper in 1997, they also reported that this variance of the linking number of this supercoiling density is 3.1 and topological equilibrium, but if you put the enzyme in, it reduces to 1.7. So if we define this LK reduction factor as the variance at equilibrium divided by the variance of the steady state with the enzyme in it, is 3.1 divided by 1.7 is equal to 1.8. So can the same kind of mechanism that we propose account for this as well? So how do we treat this on a lattice? Of course, it's much better to treat this in a continuum model, but we find that we can also treat this in a lattice because it's conceptually more simple, so that we can test a lot of idea before we go to do longer simulation that Siwon is going to tell you tomorrow. Okay, so we borrow some idea from this Wernicke chain model, discrete Wernicke chain model with elastic bonds, and we're not going to go into detail of that. The main thing that we borrow is that we can treat the torsional energy globally. So we use the right formula because we can always define a rise in the simulation. And then if we take the superhelical density as an input, then we can input this energy. We can use the lattice model to also simulate or sample conformation with different superhelical densities. Okay, so we can apply this idea, say, so these are the distribution of Rai with different superhelical density. We can apply this idea to the lattice model, which we are going to show you today. And also, in general, we can do this for random flight chain as well. Okay, so we go through the same motion and start with a juxtaposition and then look at the distribution of Rai and then using this global treatment of twisting energy, we can translate that into a distribution of LK. So this black curve here is just the global distribution without any constraint. And if we put in a free juxtaposition, of course, because this one already has a positive crossing, so it would shift the mean a bit, and then it would have a different distribution. If you have a half Hopf, it's like that, and then you have a Hopf juxtaposition, is shifted more. So the mean value of LK in the standard deviation sigma LK dependent freeform juxtaposition is pretty obvious. And so for the unconstrained, for the Hopf, for the free, these are the numbers. There's some subtle difference in the standard deviation, but it's, all of them are actually pretty close. The main differences are actually in this shift of the mean. For example, for the Hopf juxtaposition, it's shifted either plus 1.1 or minus 1.1, and for the free, it's plus or minus 0.54. The sign depends on the sign of this preformed juxtaposition. Okay, so let's first make some general comments of how we're going to do this. So each Semon passive change LK by either minus 2 or plus 2. We can go back one here. Say if we do a Semon passage here for this one, then we can go and shift it back 2 units. And if we do it on the other side, we're going to shift in the opposite direction. So even from this observation, intuitively, the Semon passage can reduce the distribution width only when the population with the preformed juxtaposition at plus 2 or at minus 2 is greater than at 0. So for a Gaussian distribution, this means that this means if we want this Semon passage to reduce the distribution width, this means requiring the LK mean for the preformed juxtaposition to be greater than 1. So it's like that. So if you remember, the Hopf juxtaposition is 1.1, 3 is minus, well, the free juxtaposition is 0.54. Okay, we first further make this assumption that the top two top isomers act on a specific juxtaposition shape irrespective of sign. That means it would act on this as well as that. And it's very simple to show using a Gaussian-like formulation that this reduction factor in LK is given by this formula. Okay, so we can just go through the same sort of master equation formulation and with this Gaussian distribution or even with exact enumeration using the data or exact data from the sampling to calculate the steady state population for the distribution of LK. And this is unconstrained, and the steady state for Hopf, remember, this is 1.1, so this is actually going to reduce the width of it a little bit. So this is a little bit reduced. For the free, this is very small, much smaller than 1. So when you, if we decide to do only a Semon passage at a free juxtaposition, you're actually going to spread out the supercoiling as shown by this red curve here. Okay, you can also look at chain length dependence, just like what we did for the linking case and also for the unknotting case. So this is the steady-state standard deviation of the distribution, and more interestingly is this reduction factor of LK. So for the Hopf juxtaposition, you can see that it's positive, so actually it's reducing the width. And this is actually interesting. At first we didn't notice that, but I was just reading a paper on the way on the plane here, and I noticed that this paper, a JMB paper by the Roker group, in 2004, actually they observed something like this. So when the loop size is very small, actually it's going in the opposite direction. So this is very interesting for the supercoil suppressing case versus the knot and the decatenating case, because for unknotting and for decatenating, usually when the size is smaller, the DNA size is smaller, actually the effect is more pronounced. But this actually is getting diminished and even going in the opposite direction. And you can see that for the free juxtaposition, it's going to spread out the distribution. Okay, now we face a little bit of a technical issue. But this is good. This is showing something that we like to see. But 1.1 is less than 1.8. well, granted that we know that this kind of model is sort of for conceptual exploration, we don't expect it to be very accurate quantitatively, but we still try to do as best as we could. So one thing that I mentioned before is this kind of operation that we use to model sediment passage. But maybe this is not the best way. This actually contains some artifact, and maybe you just do something to sort in the direction of correcting this artifact, we may do better quantitatively. Well, first you can notice that for a given n, there are more conformation with a Hopf juxtaposition than with a free juxtaposition, because a Hopf is sort of more compact. It's not less excluded volume kind of constraint. And you can actually see this by simulation. This is the population of the Hopf juxtaposition divided by the population of the free juxtaposition is always greater than one. And actually, you can see that if we do this kind of a sediment passage virtually, this tends to push this through, and this would be some kind of conformation. Probably is not, well, in some intuitive sense, probably is not that viable. So it probably is creating a lot of more topologically complicated conformation in the when we do a sediment passage at Hope versus a sediment passage at Free. So in order to counterbalance that, maybe we should also do a symmetry operation, so the reverse of the Free, adding it this up to the Hope, and the reverse of Hope, adding this to the Free, and try to counter this a little bit. So if we do that, we are okay. We recap all the results, and even better, because, as I said, because the artifact actually tend to increase the topological complexity of the resulting configuration from sediment passage through the Hopf juxtaposition. So if we symmetrize it, actually the linking reduction factor get even higher, and so as the unknotting factor. And now we have the Hopf exactly the opposite of the Free. Otherwise, we shift it down a little bit. And by doing that, we also notice another thing that's kind of interesting. And if we assume that this is a better procedure, this is the Hopf juxtaposition. But we find something, this another juxtaposition that actually is slightly better than the Hopf in terms of the unknotting potential. So we're going to tell you what that is. So here we look at the, also now we look at all possible juxtapositions, look at the correlation between the linking number, this reduction factor versus the mod reduction factor and the link. Oh, sorry, this is the LK reduction factor, this is the link reduction factor. So we see some scaling, which is also, I'm going to talk more about that in the last slide. This is also consistent with the Cossarelli experiment. And now we find, so this one is the Hopf. It's still the best in terms of decatenating. But it's not the best, it's just slightly worse than this one that we can call the twist. And actually, there are other juxtapositions that we found that's actually very good at reducing the LK variance, but they are no good for decatenating. So we're discussing with some other colleagues because of the interesting talk we heard this morning, so maybe evolution actually decided not to use this because we have to strike a balance that we can do well in all three tasks. So maybe the Hopf or the twist may be better to do that, although the twist is not that good for decatenating, but it's good enough. We don't know, but maybe this one at least has some sort of chiral asymmetry, so it may, this one could account for the chiral asymmetry that we learned about this morning. Okay, so these are the ones that we found to be very good at reducing the variance, but not good at all for decatenating and not that good for unknotting. Okay, so what is this twist juxtaposition? So if we allow ourselves some artistic license, you know, so make this into a tube, like a diagram, so this is actually part of a supercoil. So this twist juxtaposition is really part of a supercoil like this. Okay, now we can have a more universal view of this, of the RLK versus RK and RL scaling from the Cossarelli experiment. So this is the correlation between RLK, and this is equivalent to RL, more or less. is also some sort of scaling relationship for different kinds of topoisomeries from different kinds of organisms. Well, we get that, although the slope is not as high, so there's still something to work on, but to show a trend that's very promising. So the summary is just what I talked about during the talk. It's the selective segment passage of both the hook and twisted juxtaposition of a consistent rationalization of the unknotting, decatenating, disappublished, and now the supercoil suppressing action of type 2 topoisomerases. So here are my co-workers. Siro now is associate professor at Peking University, Lin and Jennifer. Thank you for your attention.
So I was thinking a little bit about your local geometry problem, where you might have this business of a bias because of the particular local geometry that you're using. And I was thinking that maybe the FCC lattice might have some advantages in this, because you could, if I'm visualizing the FCC lattice correctly, you would have a nice local geometry change which wouldn't introduce this kind of bias. Now, you'd have to be careful about the Monte Carlo if you did decide to do FCC, but there is a version of Madrasso, Litsky, and Chet which has been worked out for the FCC lattice. And it's really no more difficult to use than the original Madrasso, Litsky, Chet.
Yeah, that's a good point. But on the other hand, actually, this bias, part of it probably is real, because even for a real DNA, if you push something through, probably there's certain kinds of strain, there's certain kind of energetic cause, but not as big as on the lattice because this is really fat. So you can see that even from the Wolodarsky simulation, although he didn't comment on that, he got not a factor of one, but even if it's sort of a cross, straight, it should be exactly the same, right, if you just pass it through, but he got a factor of 1.42. He didn't comment on that, but that's maybe more real in a sense from an energetic point of view. You push it through, it introduces some sort of curvature.
I think the hook, the probability to find hooks in self-avoiding walk is governed by exponents which are known as the de Clouzot exponents, and they have been calculated.
You mean the hook juxtaposition?
Well, whether it's the probability that the two monomers in a continuous model will be close together. So they can be close either as a hook or then it's, but the cascading will be the same, and these exponents are known with a very big accuracy for.
Okay. I have a naive question. I enjoyed very much the uncatenating of rings, but if I think about then Escherichia coli genome circle, 4 million chain lengths, would that be sufficient to uncatenate?
Well, it seems. I think so, because, our argument is, although it may probably should be proven mathematically, because this thing, we see that there's a chaining dependence. So when its loop size is very small, it's really a big effect, but then it levels off. But we don't think that it would level off to zero, because this local thing, this local specific juxtaposition is introducing some kind of entropic cause that won't go away.
If you have it going both directions, if you uncatenate, then they can diffuse away and they will come together. Possibly, you can, for cell division, you can split them. Whereas you can't split them if they are catenated.
Yeah, so that's why we require the enzyme.
So it goes in both directions, in one more frequently, and when it's uncatenated, then it won't come together anymore.
Well, that's another issue that we can be taken into account if you consider concentration. But we don't have to consider concentration here. So we are assuming that even if they touch each other, as long as we look at the local geometry, we can make a distinction.
Just a short comment. So for long chromosomes, we have in addition the mechanism which exert a force which separate the chromosomes. So we heard about FTSK system where there is a force, and then this would help in addition.
Because I see.
And then, but for small plasmids which are and then the size would not make a problem, then there are no such force exerted, and this has to be rather quickly solved, the problem of deconvolution.
Okay, any other questions? Well, if not, then it's time to wound up and wind down, and see you tomorrow morning.